Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod.
Dressed to Kill. I'm Rebecca Lieb.
I'm Jason Horton.
And this is Ghost Town.
In June 2011, the tragic death of Annika DiLorenzo remains a mystery. However, her story really begins with one of the most controversial movies of all time. Annika DiLorenzo, born Marjorie Lee Thoreson, was a nude model and American exploitation movie star who was born on September 6, 1952 in St. Paul, Minnesota. Early on, her life was turbulent. Early hardships, a transfer to Los Angeles, and a successful career in the adult entertainment sector, and finally, a mystery and terrible death were all part of her story. When Thoreson was just 13 years old, her parents split. After they split up, she fled to Los Angeles in search of a new beginning and an opportunity to follow her goals. She worked in a variety of occupations to support herself once she arrived, including working at a front desk, cocktail waitressing, and even topless dancing. She changed her aliases during this time and ran into legal issues. While still in her teens, she was accused of auto theft, having a tear gas gun, and passing fake checks going under the name Priscilla Shutters. Thoreson started looking into a profession in adult entertainment in her late teens and early 20s, using the alias Connie Stodman, and made her first nude appearance in the April 1970 issue of the men's magazine Pix. But in 1973, when she started posing for Penthouse magazine under the name Annika DiLorenzo, her career took a big turn. She was named Penthouse Pet of the Month in 1973, and eventually Pet of the Year in 1975. Enter one of the most controversial films of all time, Caligula.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Caligula as a film, as a cultural landmark.
Absolutely.
Is a whole story. It's a large movie. It's a very large story.
Absolutely.
If you're not familiar with it, proceed with caution when watching this movie.
Yes. It stars Malcolm McDowell, I believe,
correct,
from Clockwork Orange. And it is such a chaotic product of its time, but that's really all I should say. Enjoy, I guess.
Caligula is a controversial historic drama released in 1979, directed by Tinto Brass and produced by Bob Guccione. If you don't know who Bob Guccione is, he was the creator of Penthouse magazine.
Yeah, it all leads back.
Another controversial figure.
Totally.
Another larger-than-life figure, not a great guy, and not...
Mm-mm.
A judgment on adult entertainment has nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
It's the everything else that comes with it and him specifically.
Totally. Well, I mean, again, movie producers, I think now more than ever looking back, have kind of a reputation, not all obviously, but I think these larger than life people who create these ambitious and kind of hollow projects business-wise, but again, you can be the judge, can often have a dark reputation. And we should do a whole episode on Caligula. There's really so much to it. It's a lot.
Caligula offers a fictionalized account of the life of Roman Emperor Gaius Julius Caesar Augustus Germanicus.
Yeah, which Roman emperors all have like 4,000 names, and most of them are like similar to the one that was last. I believe that they take on the name of the one before? Anyway, that doesn't matter. Go on.
Well, he's known by his friends as Caligula.
Yeah.
It explores the very dark and decadent aspects of Caligula's reign, showcasing his erratic behavior, sexual perversions, and descent into madness.
Which was not super true. When I went to Rome and I did a tour and everyone's like, Caligula, what about him? They're always like, no, Nero was the worst. And this is a very fictionalized account. It's very sensationalized. It's very 70s.
A lot of cocaine.
Yeah. Like they had in ancient Rome.
That's blessed true. By the
That's
Vatican.
True. That's fair.
The controversy surrounding Caligula stemmed from explicit sexual content, historical inaccuracy, high production values in conjunction with the adult themes, legal issues, and negative critical reception. The film challenged societal norms and pushed the boundaries of what is acceptable in mainstream cinema, leading to its controversial reputation. It starred acting heavyweights Helen Mirren and Peter O'Toole.
Oh my God. I did not remember that.
That's big. They did not know what they were getting themselves into, turns out. During the insane editing sessions, Guccione went back and, I would say, guerrilla style, shot hardcore sex scenes, pornography, and edited it into the movie after the fact. So you're in this movie, and against pretty much everyone who was involved, well, some of them didn't know. The director had no, it was like, I'm not, it doesn't need all this. And Bob Guccione's like, my last name's Guccione.
Yeah, you exactly. Know? Penthouse baby. Or like, think about like Dame Helen Mirren coming in and like, and reading the script and doing her scenes and being like, you know, whatever. And then watching the movie and to be cut into with like hardcore sex scenes.
When they filmed in 1976, he actually went back and raided all the props and just shot scenes using nothing to do with the actual movie, brought people down and then just shot sex scenes. Mm-hmm. And to probably a lot of people's surprise and chagrin, they were like, whoa, what? When did you do this? He's like, oh, I went back there and did it.
I remember that vase and that skull and that flower pot. You're just like, I remember those things. I don't remember that person's asshole, you know? It's wild.
This is where Annika DiLorenzo comes in. She was a girlfriend of Bob Guccione on the side. She was a side girlfriend because he actually had his actual girlfriend.
Girlfriend.
And she had hopes of being in the movies. And what happened is a lot of disappointment. And then things start to go south very, very quickly after this break.
Hi, I'm Spencer Henry, some guy with a microphone and also the host of Cult Leader Podcast from the Morbid Podcast Network. Cult Leader is a weekly show, and in each episode, we're covering a range of topics from, well, cults, of course, crimes, America's Most Wanted list, the occasional extraterrestrial, or televangelists gone wild. You never know what you're gonna get. So if you're into that sort of thing, come hang with us every Tuesday. We like to keep it casual around these parts. We just love to learn about this wacky, wacky world of ours. On Cult Leader, we've got hundreds of episodes from fraudulent satanic ritual abuse cases to haunted asylum or strange disappearances. If any of this sounds up your alley, let me join you on your next car ride, flight, or wherever you listen. Follow Cult Leader wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.
Hi, hello, how are you?
Hello.
How are you?
How you doing?
Oh, sounds good.
That? You like that?
Yeah.
You like that?
Yeah, okay. Good. All right.
Do you like that? Do you like me? Like me.
Say you like me. Say you like me. We're all very fragile.
That's okay. But when are we not fragile?
Tuesdays around 3, I guess I'm not that fragile.
You're bullshitting. That's a fucking lie. That's a lie.
I'm pretty fragile.
Yeah, exactly.
We want to say hello to anyone who's listening.
Hello.
Spreading the good word of Ghost Town, supporting the show. We thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. We would like to say hello to our own Roman Empire, our government, our democracy.
That's right. Have as much sex as you want.
Or if you're tired, relax.
Lay down.
Don't feel pressured into doing anything.
No, do whatever you want.
The royal mayors. The esteemed mayors.
Mm-hmm. Our council. Our leadership.
Always wearing a crown of what? What do they wear crowns of?
Like ivy?
Ivy. Like
they wear the little...
ivy.
Yeah.
They're wearing a crown of ivy. A lot of gold...
Leaf
and
togas
and making it look good.
Yeah, always.
Cat Joselle.
Hello.
Perched, hand stretched out, talking to the people.
Naturally. On a staircase, maybe?
Like on a staircase, on a steps, and everyone's coming around.
Yeah, it's like, what's this guy about?
This guy, he's about Charlie Gilbert.
Hello.
And then just relaxing, just kicking.
Lounging.
Back.
Maybe with a bunch of grapes?
Maybe a bunch of grapes. Getting fed the grapes.
Fanned?
Fanned.
The frond?
Getting a couple of grapes.
Oh.
Why not?
Sure.
In a hard week.
Ugh.
It's Casey Weber.
Hello.
And just out frolicking. Just frolicking around, shirking a duty or two.
Oh.
Why not?
Why not? You do what you can do.
You know, just... flouncing around, getting into some poetry, getting into whatever.
I see like tall grasses. I see daisies. Yeah. I see wondering and wandering.
I see Ashley Mattson.
Hello.
And move over, Zeus. Get the heck out of here. I know that's probably Greek, or is that Roman? I don't know. My gods. Move over, Zeus. I don't care where it is. Zeus has got to move over for our governor. Just there looking down.
Presiding. The clouds have parted.
What something do mortal people something? I don't know. I don't know any of the things. Just looking down, being prayed to.
Yeah, worshipped.
Worshipped.
From an altar. You get gifts at an altar, wine and cheeses and meats and beautiful things because you deserve it.
Chalices.
That too.
A couple of chalices.
Yeah.
A few chalices.
Sure, throw some chalices in.
Being carried around, maybe on a throne.
When you dare come
down to earth. By some muscle men.
Oh, yeah.
Some heavenly muscle men.
Yeah, some Herculean men.
That would be our governor.
Avian Nobles.
You want no ads, no chit-chat, bonus episodes. Working on one now. Just the good stuff. 7 days free. You can take it and listen.
Tasty.
And leave. Or support us a little extra.
Yeah.
For $2.
Just $2 is all it takes for your world to change. Or not. Or not.
Or not at all. Or you're $2 worse off. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod. Okay.
All right.
Let's go back to ancient Rome via the 1970s. Annika de Lorenzo was in penthouse, and she was promised a lot of things by Bob Guccione. Mm-hmm. He said that she was going to have Helen Mirren's part.
Oh, my God.
She did not get Helen Mirren's part
in
Caligula.
No.
He was essentially a pimp in a way. He tried to get her to seduce like a CEO that he thought he was going to get funding from. Had her as a maid / girlfriend.
Of
so
course,
a live-in maid / girlfriend.
And this feels very like earlier Hollywood, like 1920s and 30s Hollywood when like I forget if it was like the Hiltons, like Kathy Hilton's mom or someone in that family. Again, I'm butchering this, but where they would have executives or producers and their girlfriends or women that they were affiliated with would go do favors for them and do these different things. And some of them would be sexual, but it was all kind of in the orbit of entertainment, but not quite being in it as such. This feels a little like late for that, but it makes sense too.
So she was hoping to land the part of Sisonia in Caligula, and that went to Helen Mirren.
Okay. I mean, again, like pretty good to lose a role to Helen Mirren.
Not still. Bad. But to become essentially a glorified extra.
Not good. Not good.
She was downgraded to receive $500 pay and was also promised back end amounts, profits. None of that materialized. And she was essentially a glorified extra. Not that there's anything wrong with doing background work or extra work done playing myself.
Of course.
In my history.
Absolutely.
But in this situation where you are in a relationship.
Yeah, you're invested. Yeah.
Yeah, you're someone
you've probably
invested.
Done a lot of things and you've been made a lot of promises too, I would imagine.
So she's in the original cut as just walking around.
Mm-hmm.
When they go back to film,
She
is front and center, and it's pornography.
Yeah.
And that's what she was talked into. I mean, I don't know the situation. I imagine there's a lot of manipulation and gaslighting and drugs and all the things.
Mm-hmm. Abuses of power across the board.
Bob Guccione wanted plenty of sex, ideally unsimulated. And despite the director's intentions to keep it a satire and have some artistic dignity about politics and corruption, that got usurped by Bob Guccione.
Mm-hmm.
A few weeks after principal photography completed, Guccione persuaded Di Lorenzo and a few other performers to covertly go back to Rome and secretly record pornography.
Great. And you know if it's a secret film shoot, it's probably great. You know if you're keeping it from the major creative force like the director and the main cast, it's probably a great idea.
It's like, well, you'll have a more featured part in this movie. It won't be good for your career and probably your psyche.
Mm-hmm.
It depends. I mean, it's for somebody that might be like, this is great. I love it. But I think when you're promise a lot of things and you have a goal of making it in the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
Which is...
You're up for Helen Mirren's role, a main role in this thing. And, you know, every step down, you're like, do I do this? What happens next? Am I okay with this? Probably not.
And when the movie was released, eventually, it did not have a great impact on DiLorenzo. It became a cult classic of a film, but it did not do anything to help her career.
In fact, I don't think it did anything to help anybody's career in it. I remember maybe reading, because again, this is something that I think we kind of gravitate towards for an episode. I'm sure we'll do one that's kind of on the full experience of the movie. But I think a lot of people, not so much Helen Mirren, you know, like not so much these larger actors, but I think a lot of the actors kind of were penalized for doing this or had to kind of answer for this film for years and years to come.
Now, if you're ever wondering, hey, how do you sometimes come up with the episodes that you do? This is how I came to find Annika DiLorenzo. I was watching a movie, Dressed to Kill, Brian De Palma, which is a very erotic mystery, Alfred Hitchcock. It's strange because it's both good and bad at the same time. Mm-hmm. Great cinematography.
Yeah.
Acting is here and there. It's a little bit of camp. But very kind of sexy, erotic.
Sure, sure.
You know, 1980.
Yeah. Is that pre or post body double?
Pre.
Okay.
Yeah, it's pre body. I think that was 84. This is Angie Dickinson, Michael Caine. So when I'm watching a movie, I can't help but to go and see who was in this movie and what they did after.
Yeah, dig around.
Annika DiLorenzo is in it. Not a speaking role. I'm not an unimportant role. Mm-hmm. I don't want to give away any of the movie for anybody, but it almost had a little foreshadowing. You see somebody who has like a pretty small part, but it's like a focus part. And you're like, oh, what happened to this person? And then, of course, you go down a huge rabbit hole. And then I became somewhat obsessed finding out all this information.
Totally.
Because it takes us to Southern California.
Hell yeah.
And we are going to get there. So she had a falling out with Bob Guccione.
Naturally.
She sued him in 1981 for sexual harassment.
Love it.
Fraud and
inflicting
emotional distress. It took more than 9 years for the case to come to a conclusion, but she won a $4 million lawsuit.
That's amazing. And I think in that point in time, I don't think you saw that much of that.
That's punitive damage and $60,000 compensatory damage, which is a victory, but it was short-lived because on appeal, the $4 million she did not get.
No.
In accordance with state legislation. In retaliation, Guccione published more pictures of her in sexual acts with Caligula in Penthouse. She had some small roles and more exploitation-y type stuff, but that was it for her Hollywood career. She ended up getting married and divorced, having a daughter. She worked as a waitress, yoga instructor, certified nursing assistant. And in 2011, she changed her name to Annika Vasta, which is her married name. And at the time, 58, residing with her sister in Sherman Oaks.
Down the street, down the 101.
Yeah, a little up the 101 in the valley, you know, heading towards the valley. And then was there for a time, and then she headed down to Carlsbad, Camp Pendleton area. She goes down there, and then on January 2nd, 2011, packs up her car, rents a room, and spends the night driving around and making calls to her loved ones.
Oh, no.
2 days later, on January 4th, 2011, her body was found by joggers on the beach close to Camp Pendleton. An autopsy revealed she had a broken neck and back before she drowned. So her official cause of death is drowning. And there is some controversy on the specifics of her death and what was the cause of the death based on certain factors of where her car was, how she was found, the distance between the car and her body. She rented a room at Motel 6 and didn't really seem to set up shop at all. A bloodied steak knife, a blood-stained shirt, and sports bra wrapped in plastic liner of an ice bucket from her hotel were all on the floor of her 2001 Mazda 626. Her wrist had some hesitation wounds. I guess I'll call them. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you call them, but there's some like non-deep cuts, but they look like the intention.
Like you're not trying to.
No, it is like you're trying to.
Oh, okay, okay.
It's like, yeah, you're trying.
You're trying to.
You're trying to, but it's superficial enough where maybe you're like, you know what? No.
Yeah, okay.
And this is speculation. You don't really know, but that's what it looks like based on reporting. Mm-hmm. And by people who have seen it and autopsies and,
sure.
And such. She did not have any drugs in her system, but her car contained lithium and Xanax. And she had been known to have a little paranoia, depression, and indications that she would possibly like to end her life. Mm-hmm. But where her car is found, and I tried looking at some maps. I used to live in the San Diego area. I'm familiar, but where her body was and where her car's parked, how she got there, she would either have had to jump, but that didn't make sense. So there's some controversy in like how her body got to that point. Mm-hmm. Meaning, did she get there herself in some way or did someone get her there? The NCIS agents investigating concluded that she had not jumped off the 60-foot cliff. And the forensic pathologist determined while she had a broken neck and back, the cause of her death was drowning. The report also indicated two shallow stab wounds to her chest.
Hmm.
And the autopsy showed no evidence of sexual abuse. Family members say that she had a daughter in college who she spoke with every day. Some family members say she was murdered. DiLorenzo's sister, Susan Thorson, says, quote, "I think something happened when Annika couldn't maybe fend for herself." The investigation was concluded in December 2011, a tragic and enigmatic end to a complicated life.
History is full of bizarre, unsolved mysteries. And over time, these stories have been bent by rumor, warped by social media, and twisted into legend. I'm Michael May, and on A Study of Strange, we dig into these real mysteries and seek the truth, as close as we can get anyway. Recently, we've covered true crime cases like the Greystone Mansion murder, the Red Lipstick Killer, and America's first reported serial killers. Of course, every now and then we also dive into the odd, esoteric, and paranormal, including vanishing people, haunted locations, and UFO history. So if you like your mysteries historical, or if you love a good debunking every now and then, search A Study of Strange wherever you listen to podcasts. And remember, the truth is always stranger than fiction.